Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. I've been speaking on Sri Vishnu Sahasranam. Who's heard of Vishnu Sahasranam? Yeah. Sri Vishnu Sahasranam. Actually, there's more than one of them, but the most famous one is in the... Who knows where it appears? Which shastra does it appear in? Mahabharata, spoken by... Bhishma. Vishnu Sahasranam means Vishnu, means the Supreme Personality of God. What does it mean? Well, that's described in all these names. Sahasra means thousand and Nama means name. So 1,000 names of Vishnu. So I'm going through them one by one. Now I had to start today on name 242, according to one counting system. But I'll just backpedal to add some points to some names that I spoke on previously. So this is analysis of his names. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be understood simply by analysis, but by considering his names, which are not exactly given to him, but they are eternally existent along with him, which describes his names. One of the names describes his names, at least one. One of the names is Sahasranama, he who has 1,000. Tanama rupa charitadi sukirtananu smrityokramena. I'm saying this again. Smrityokramena rasana manasi niyoja. So this is recommended that to always remember his names, forms, qualities, to nicely chant them, and with the tongue, and to meditate on them within the mind. Tishte vraje tananu anuragi jananugami kalam neyad ityakilam upadeshasaram. Residing in Vrindavan, following in the footsteps of a devotee who has attachment for Krishna, one should spend all one's time in this way. This is the essence of all advice. So, although many people would disagree with this, living in London is not on the same level as living in Vrindavan. Probably most of the people in Vrindavan, if you gave them the chance to live in London, well, some of them would. Definitely. Well, I can't come closer. It's like the horse, the donkey with the carrot. If I go forward, this goes forward also. I have to adjust it. It's pretty close already. How come? Okay. So anyway, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is omnipresent, so we can glorify him even in this miserable place known as London. London is hell, by the way, in case you didn't know, at least according to Srila Prabhupada. Do you know that? When in a class in Berry Place, one of his disciples, Krishnavesha Devi Dasi, asked him, for some reason or other, she asked at the end of a Bhagavad Gita class, Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita class spoken, is Bhagavad Gita spoken in hell? And Srila Prabhupada said, I'm speaking Bhagavad Gita here in London. So, the average beef-eating Englishman wouldn't be very satisfied to hear this. But anyway, let's talk about Krishna. Then we'll be Where? In heaven? In Vaikuntha. Naham tishtami. No, he doesn't live there. He doesn't live in Vaikuntha. Naham tishtami Vaikuntha yoginam hridayeshu va. He's not in Vaikuntha. He's not in the hearts of the yogis. Where is he? Yatra gayanti madbhakta tatra tishtami narada. So wherever his devotees are glorifying him, so let's glorify him. One of the first names in Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, name number 4, is Bhutakrit. So just to summarize that, he who makes the living beings, not in the sense that he invents them or that he makes new ones all the time, as in the Islamic and Christian traditions, there's an idea that God makes all these new souls and then he chucks most of them into hell forever without any chance of redemption. But Bhutakrit means he who gives existence to that which exists, or he is the existence of the existent, who gives being to the beings. Everything exists because Krishna exists. You can think about that one. Another name, Prasannatma. I spoke on this in some length. Just one other point about this, that his happiness overflows. There's something in the Bible like that, isn't there? My cup overfloweth. Something like that. Anyone know any Bible scholars here? No? My cup overfloweth with joy and all my enemies are killed. Something like that. In one of the Psalms. So his happiness overflows. He's so happy that he wants to share his happiness with others. That's quite a different conception of God to the angry old man sitting on a cloud throwing everyone into hell. I think we should preach this, tell people that. All these atheists, well, it's a good idea not to believe in that angry old man sitting up there. But here's a God you can actually make friends with. As Srila Prabhupada told one of his disciples, who was about 15 years old, girl at that time, she asked him, that, can you actually speak with Krishna? He said, yes, you can speak with Krishna, and he'll kiss you also. So, you can have a nice God, not a nasty God. So anyone who becomes Krishna conscious also becomes Prasannatma, happy in his very being. And that happiness we should want to share with others, as Krishna wants to share his happiness with others. Okay, so on to name 242. Satkarta. Satkarta. Do you all know this word, Satkar? Satkar? Have you heard that word? It means something like when someone comes, giving respect, offering respect. Sanmandana, satka, like this. So giving respect. So satkarta means who gives respect. It could literally mean one who makes good. Those who are good, he makes them good. Those who follow him, those who follow his instructions, they become good. Sat, this word has many meanings. One meaning is eternal. So those who follow Krishna, he makes them eternal. We're all eternal, but we've come to the atmosphere of temporality. So if we simply do what Krishna wants us to do, if we become absorbed in Krishna, then he awards us our position of eternality. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mang namaskaru mame vaishasi satyante pratijayane priyosime. Those Krishna instructs to think of him, worship him, bow down before him, be his devotee, and by doing so Krishna promises, I will bring you to me. So Krishna is Sat, means he's all good, all right, in the sense that everything he does and says is right, all proper, eternal, and he makes even those who are in the atmosphere of Asat, which means in this material world, he makes them, he gives them the position of eternality. He offers, Krishna himself offers honor. We see, although he is the most honorable, Krishna is to be honored. Krishna is to be respected. In Vedic culture, Vaishnava culture, someone becomes respectable if they respect Krishna, and someone who doesn't respect Krishna is not respectable, whatever other reasons they may have for being respectable. In the materialistic society, one becomes respectable if one has lots of money, or if one is famous for doing such feats as being expert in kicking a football. That's very important here in England. You have to learn that. In the 10 days in England, that's a central pillar of not only England, but Scotland also. England, Scotland, Wales, they're more into rugby. But anyway, it's a very important thing to know that the most important thing in England is that they're still wishing that their football team would win. You know all about football, right? You're one of those few people in India who are interested in football. Is it increasing or what? Maybe with the TV. They always seem to be a more exciting game than cricket, which Indians like. So, in England, if someone's an expert footballer, they are highly respected. Isn't it? You know all the names of the England football team, even though he's from India. Is it? You know all the names. So, what else? Lots of money. If you can yell into a microphone some horrible sounds to the accompaniment of some discordant, what they call music, and somehow or other you become famous for it. In other words, if you're a rock star, then you become respected. What else? What else do you have to do? Become an MP, Prime Minister? Some people respect the Prime Minister. Not many. What do you think? Yeah, I guess. Yeah, they do. Yeah.
A wealthy businessman.
Wealthy businessmen. Who are the wealthy businessmen in England? You don't know much about them, do you? Mostly they're all the UK businesses are owned by people from outside UK, isn't it?
You've got one at the moment.
Virgin, yeah, that guy, what?
Branson.
Richard Branson, he's a famous guy, he's a sir.
Indian.
The Indian ones, Mittal is here, and Anil Agarwal.
Hindujas
are top in England. They're the richest.
They've taken over?
Oh, really? Well, that's big to swallow him up. you've got to be a big fish to swallow up Mittal.
Not forgetting the Queen.
Oh, yeah, she's respected.
That's your problem. The new boy.
Yeah. Well, actually, she is respectable, isn't it? I mean, she's kept a very respectable profile all these years. She's done her job as a queen well, for better or for worse. So she's not such a good example of someone who's respected for no reason. For what it's worth, and I'm sure she doesn't care at all, I give her a high ranking. Better than the rock stars. Anyway, this is just pointing out by showing the opposite, how everyone offers respect to someone or other. Unless someone's really, really at the bottom end of human culture, someone who doesn't offer respect to anyone for any reason whatsoever, that might be someone like an alcoholic in the street, something like that. Even they might offer respect if you give them a bottle of wine. They might be happy with it. I'm sure they'd be happy with you. So everyone offers some respect, but who is actually respectable? Well, the person who is Aishvaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yashasya Shriya Jnana Vairagya Yoschaiva Shandang Bhaga Itingena. One who has all the qualities in full, which are the qualities which make one Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, namely all wealth. We don't say it's bad to offer respect to people who have wealth, but who is the most wealthy? Krishna. Aishvaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya, who's the most powerful? We offer respect to the Prime Minister. He's powerful, maybe not physically powerful, but politically powerful. But who's the most powerful is Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Most famous is Krishna. Most beautiful is Krishna. That's a disputable point. I mean, in Vrindavan, people say Radharani is more beautiful. But anyway, just we're talking philosophically here. Virya Yashasya Shriya. Jnana, most knowledgeable and most renounced. In this country, renunciation is not considered a quality. So most who has got all qualities is most respectable. And that is Krishna. But Krishna, he offers respects to others. No one's more respectable than Krishna. But Krishna offers respects to others. He takes the position, when he performs his lila in this world, he takes the position of an inferior. To who? To Krishna offers respects to Yudhishthira. There's one nice painting done by BBT artists of baby Krishna holding Nanda Baba's shoes on his head, wooden shoes. He's bringing them to him, putting them on his head. If you put someone's shoes on your head, that's a sign of showing greatest respect. That's why in the temples, in South India especially, you can go and the padukas of the Lord will be placed on your head. That's a sign of submission, that you offer all respect. So, Krishna also, he respected Uddhava as his minister, even though Krishna himself is the ocean of knowledge. Krishna respected his guru who taught him everything, 64 arts in 64 days, Sandipanimoni, again the name is coming. Rama, he offered respect, of course, to his father, Dashrath. Chanting japa? You can't hear class and chant japa, so please do one or the other. He offered respects to his mothers, namely, we're having a little quiz here. Who's Rama's actual metaphysical, I won't say physical mother, transcendental mother, direct mother, Atma Mata is Kaushalya. Then Sumitra and Kaikeyi, and Rama, even though Kaikeyi betrayed him practically, I don't know if that's the right word exactly, but Rama, he never said any bad word about her. And he told Bharat, who was horrified at what his own mother had done, he told, you go on respecting. You know, he always showed respect to respectable people. So Krishna, he would offer respect daily to the, in Dwaraka, to the Brahmanas. Yeah. So in this way, he showed how to offer respect to those who are respectable. Who are respectable? Those who respect Krishna. The king is to be respected in human society. Why? Because he's a representative of Krishna. Naranam chanaradhipam. Among humans, I am the king, Krishna says. So, king has got that position. He's maintaining and protecting on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's a function of the Supreme Lord, which he, the king, does that within certain jurisdiction. What is that sound that keeps on coming? Yeah, leave the door open, then we can get some little air circulation. Please open it and leave it open. That's for security, is it?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing? Sitting in your own house in a little quiet suburb and still, if the door opens, you have to be, what's going on? Thief is coming. What a situation. There's no proper king protecting us. Should kill all the miscreants, and that would reduce the population significantly. They think it's a good idea to reduce the population. So, Krishna, as a matter of duty, we should offer respect to the respectable. So Krishna shows that. Srila Prabhupada said that he told his disciples that we should offer respect even to Mayavadi sannyasis, whose philosophy we don't like at all. But if they're actually following and actually living as sannyasis and not being simply dressed as a sannyasi, but if they're actually living strictly as a sannyasi, we should offer respect. Because it's within the Vedic culture, which is given by Krishna, Chato Varnyang Maya Srishtam, the sannyasi is to be respected. So Krishna upholds that also. So as a matter of duty, to teach the Vedic principles for the benefit of human society, Krishna himself offers respect to the respectable. And Krishna also does that out of affection. To Yudhishthira, he bows down. To Devaki and Vasudev, he bows down. But it's not just out of duty, but it's affection also. In Vedic culture, that offer respect to superiors not means not simply out of awe and reverence, but affection. In a good kingdom, naturally the citizens, they feel not only submission to, but also affection toward the king. And we see that even in Thailand today, even though there's a king and he doesn't have any official political power, but the citizens, they all love him. Because the idea that the king, they don't have any proper idea because it's a Buddhist country which borrowed the Vedic culture without the underlying philosophy. But the idea is there that the king is there. We love him. All the kings in Thailand, their name is Rama. It's pronounced differently in Thai language, but Rama. And the old capital is Ayutthaya. So the name is derived from Ayodhya. Now it's Bangkok, Krunte, but the old capital is Ayutthaya. So the idea is there that the king should be like Rama. And the description we have of Ayodhya with Rama is that the citizens, they respected Rama, but they loved him. There's very deep love for him. So the Krishna, he offers respect, but it's not just respect, like just some salute to the officer in the army, not like that, but with great love. So sat karta, sat, ultimately that means the platform of love, because that which is eternal means Krishna. Krishna consciousness puts us in the eternal situation. That situation is attained by love. Bhaktya mama bijanati. Krishna is to be known by love. So knowing doesn't mean just 1 plus 1 equals 2. Or David Cameron is the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. It's not just a matter of knowing, but not just book knowledge, but the respect. Krishna shows how to show respect with love, which is the essence. And sat, he makes everything sat. He makes everything proper. So it is proper to love. So sadkarta, one who benefits them, he makes those who are good, good. By remembering Krishna, who is all good, then anyone else also becomes good. So he himself, although he is the most honorable person, he offers honor to us. So this actually, when we read or hear, Ramayana, then we can see it's full of respect, completely mixed up with love at all the relationships that guru, disciple, Ram and Lakshman, they go with Vishvamitra, and definitely there's great respect, but how Vishvamitra is very happily instructing them and they're happily serving him. There's a very nice painting by B.K. Sharma, I believe, of Rama and Lakshman massaging the feet of Vishvamitra. So it's not done just as a duty, but as an exchange of love. That's the whole point. One of the names of Krishna is Nyaya, here in the Vishnu Sahasranam. So it means justice. He's giving justice, but not just some clockwork, rigid justice. They're not computerized. Okay, you did this, you get this punishment. You did this, you get this reward. But Krishna is a person. He's, if you like, you could say he's sentimental and emotional. He doesn't lose his balance out of love, except when he's in Vrindavan. But everything is going on according to justice. But if you want to escape the justice department, then we have to come in the love department, in the mercy department. Krishna says that apichet sudara charo bhajate mam ananya bhag sadhureva samantavya. So even if one is the most rascal of rascals, if he worships me with full intention, Krishna says he's a sadhu. So we may say, well, that's not right. That's not proper. How can that be? That's true. It's not proper according to the law, but Krishna, he can circumvent the law, flout the law, and if you can make a friend of Krishna, then Krishna can let you off all the worst sins. But then, if you are a friend of Krishna, you don't commit the worst sins anyway, but circumstantially, if one does, then Krishna will just bounce you out of prison. So, yeah, and that point should be understood, that doesn't mean that, well, okay, I'll just love Krishna and do all nonsense, because Krishna tells us not to do nonsense. But we should, not that we should desire to be honored by Krishna, but we should also respect the kind of people that he respects. The brahmanas, the Vaishnavas, the sannyasis, the gurus, like this. Of course, they should be bona fide gurus and not bogus. That should be understood. So, and the next name is Satkrita. Satkrita. Satkrit or Satyakrit. One who is himself worshipped by those who are worshipped by others. Satkrit. So Satka, one who receives Satka is Satkrit. So Krishna, he is honored by those who, he's honored, he should be honored by everyone, but he's honored by, especially the fact that he's honored by those who are honored, shows that he is the most honorable. Yang Brahma, Varunendra, Rudra, Maruta, Stunvanti, Divyai, Stuvai. All the devas, those who are honored within the universe, they all honor Krishna. So who's the most honorable? Is Krishna. You want to know who is God? We should find out. Who is the most honorable and respectable? Who is respected by the most respectable? There's a story, well-known story, of a man in a village who saw that everyone respected the headman of the village, so he thought, oh, well, I should respect him too. Then one day he saw that one tax collector came around, and the headman of the village honored this tax collector. So he thought, well, why should I honor the headman of this village when he's honoring someone else? So he followed the tax collector and started serving him. The tax collector went village to village and he saw everywhere he's being respected. But then when the tax collector went back to the capital, he saw the tax collector honored the king. So he thought, why should I honor the tax collector? I'll serve the king. So he started serving the king. Then he was serving the king, and then one day the king went to the forest to visit his guru, and he bowed down to his guru, and the man thought, then why should I honor the king? Why should I serve the king? The guru, he's honored by the king. So he said, I serve the guru. And the king left, and this man from the village stayed and said, why did you come here to say, what's this? What's going on? So he explained, I honored the headman of the village, then I honored the tax collector, then I honored the king, and then I saw he's offering respect to you. So then the guru said, okay, come with me to where I do my puja. And he bowed down and said, why are you bowing down to those stones? This is not stone. This is Krishna. He's the supreme. Everyone should honor him. So if we find out who is the top respectable person, that is Krishna. He is to be respected by all. One who is worshipped, who is worshipable by everyone. The king is respected by some people. Like in this country, the queen is respected by many people, and some people want to kick her out of Buckingham Palace and make her wash the toilets. No more kings. They did that in France. How long ago? 250 years ago. Well, they didn't make them wash the toilets. They did the guillotine on them, chopped their heads off. So, in summer. So, not everyone respects. And even if you take the head of the government, well, there are many people that don't respect the head of the government in this country. They'd like to throw rotten tomatoes at him. What else would they do? Eggs, yeah. This Blair, when he went to Ireland, to Dublin, about, what, a year or two ago, to market his pack of lies, I mean his autobiography. Pack of lies means that's what he always does. Anyway, see, I don't respect him. So he got some rotten eggs thrown at him. So, not everyone in this world, not everyone respects everyone, even the most respectable. Practically in the world, the Queen of England is probably the most respected person alive today, if you take the whole world. But not everyone respects. But she's also called the defender of the faith. I mean, she also supposed to be a representative of God. So Krishna means who is respected by everyone, and especially people who are sane, who are actually respectable by their activities. That means they're sadhus. They act in a manner that is respectable. Sadhu means you don't see a sadhu at the disco or in the bar getting drunk. So sadhu means respectable. By his very behavior, by his whole outlook on life, by his compassion for others, by wanting to give them the guidance by which they can be uplifted. So sadhus are the most respected, and they respect Krishna. So the next name of Krishna is sadhu. You've all heard this word, sadhu, sadhu. Maybe you didn't hear the name Satkrit or Satkarta, but you've all heard the name sadhu. But when we think of a sadhu, we don't think of Krishna generally, do we? We think of a devotee of Krishna or someone who is, we could say, a Hindu religious person. We generally think like that. Actually, sadhu, this word, doesn't necessarily mean a renunciant or a sannyasi. Can be a grihastha also. But especially one who's living a very disciplined and regulated and religious life. They're considered a sadhu. But the ultimate sadhu is Krishna. And as with all other names, there, each of the names, it overlaps with other names. So the very fact that Krishna offers respects to others, that is a symptom of a sadhu, saintly person. Srila Prabhupada often translated sadhu as a saintly person. So a saintly person, though they are highly respected, they offer respect to others. It's not that they just think, well, I should be respected and to hell with everyone else. But one of the symptoms of a sadhu is that they do offer respect to those who are respectable. So there are several names of Vishnu in Vishnu Sahasranam which are all-encompassing. They include all the other names, or all the other names are components of this name. And among them is Vishnu. One of the names in Vishnu Sahasranam is Vishnu. It's the second name. Another all-encompassing name is the first name, Vishva. Narayana, that name is going to come up very soon. I think it's just two names from now. So these names, they include all the other names. The name Satya, that includes everything else about Krishna, is included in the name Satya. So this name Sadhu, that also includes all the other qualities are included in the name Sadhu. And in Satya, and in Vishnu, which means all-pervading, all-encompassing. So the name Sadhu is a complete and perfect description of Krishna. And the completely complete name of Krishna is Krishna. That's right. This is a complete name. Everything's included. Sadhu. Of course, yeah, completely complete, because Krishna is all beautiful. A sadhu in this world doesn't have to be beautiful. And often they don't look very beautiful because they're not trying to be beautiful. They'll deliberately neglect their bodies. And even if they don't neglect their body, they don't make any particular effort to be beautiful. You won't find the sadhu at the, what do they have, this nail spas, they call it, where they go in and they decorate the nails, or they won't be having their nails manicured, or They do have distinctive hairstyle, but not one made by a barber. Well, shaved head and shikars like that. Or there's this jata, long. That's also, they have to put something from a tree, some tree sap, and that makes the jatas, makes it as it is. Otherwise, it'll just fall off. It'll rot and fall off. So, but the point is, they're not in any fashion shows or posing as the Mr. Sadhu 2013, who's the most good-looking of them all, who's the most muscular. They're not concerned with that. So then they're not trying to be beautiful materially, although their character should be beautiful. Krishna also doesn't try to be beautiful. He just is beautiful. Automatically, axiomatically, he's beautiful. So all these names, they culminate in the name Sadhu, which means who is Sat, who is connected with Sat. Sat means eternal, proper, good, correct. So these are the qualities of a sadhu. Sadhu means who is in connection with Sat, and Krishna is the ultimate Sat. Proper, correct. Yeah, again that name, Nyai. Krishna is a principled person. Principled means he lives according to certain principles. Krishna is not a whimsical person who... For instance, Krishna has the principle, he's fair, he's nyai. He's fair. This idea that God, if you get it wrong one lifetime around, or if, for instance, if you're not a Christian, you might have been born in a family, a non-Christian family, or you might have never heard of Jesus Christ throughout your life, but hard luck, you didn't wash yourself, you didn't bathe in the blood of Jesus, and you have to burn in hell forever. This is not a description of Krishna. It's some imaginary tribal god who the Jews used to worship and then got taken over by Christianity. Just some imagine. The Supreme is not so unprincipled and unfair that if someone doesn't worship him in one lifetime round, then he throws you into hell forever. He gives you another chance. That is the meaning of principled. That is the meaning of sat. So it's understandable why people don't want to believe in a God or worship a God who is so unprincipled. Krishna's highest principle is bhaktavatsalya, affection to his devotee. He's principled. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dveshosti napriyaha. Krishna is principled. He doesn't discriminate between anyone, between people. He doesn't hate anyone. He doesn't favor anyone. But ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham. His highest principle, his general principle is fairness to all, and his highest principle is his affection for his devotees. So these may apparently seem to be contradictory, but they're not. Krishna is a principled person. One of the names for Krishna is Yama. He's the dispenser of justice. So that's there also. Mameva ye prapadyante, mayam etam tarantite. One who surrenders to me gets beyond the ordinary justice department and they come under Krishna's protection. Or more specifically, mahatmanastu mang parsa daivin prakriyam ashritaha. They come under Radha's protection. So all these sadhus, there are so many sadhus, in the census of India that was conducted during the time of Indira Gandhi. I don't know if they still do it, but they put sadhus and beggars in one category. They think a sadhu is a beggar. So many maybe in India. Actually, all sadhus are supposed to be beggars, and that's supposed to be something respectable. Bhikshuk. means one who begs. So that's something respectable for a sadhu to beg. But if that's because he is engaged in transcendental activities, spiritual activities, so he benefits others by begging from them. If someone just becomes a sadhu because he couldn't earn a living, that's not very respectable. That's also one reason for becoming a sadhu. But the real sadhu is a devotee of Krishna. As we find in the Bhagavatam, sadhunam hridayam tvaham, tvaham sadhunam hridayam mahyam, madanyate na jananti nahang tebhyo managapi. The real definition of a sadhu is one who never forgets Krishna, always remembers Krishna. Krishna never forgets them. Also, Krishna is the heart of the sadhus. The sadhu is the heart of Krishna. So, what else does Krishna say about this? Aham bhakta paradhino. So, again, bhakta. That shows that sadhu means ultimately a devotee of Krishna. Hiya svatantra eva dvija. Sadhu bhya grasta hridayo. Bhaktair bhakta jana priyaha. Krishna says that I'm not independent, I'm completely dependent upon my devotees. They have captured my heart, and even someone who is dear to my devotee is dear to me. So this is a real sadhu. This is the real meaning of sadhu, who is the devotee of Krishna. This, of course, we also say Mayavadi, we may call a sadhu if he actually follows spiritual principles, but without following the real central spiritual principle of Krishna bhakti, then there's something seriously missing in his sadhutva, or position of being a sadhu. But still, we may respect, but we don't like to associate with non-devotees. So such sadhus, mayavadis, and those who, I mean, there are different gradations, but if they're not a devotee of Krishna, we may recognize them as a sadhu in some way, but not really. So who makes the sadhus sadhus, or what is the quality of a sadhu that makes them a sadhu, is that they're connected with Krishna. So we find that Krishna, he comes to the world for the very sake of the sadhus. Paritranaya sadhunam. He comes to uplift the sadhus and to deliver them from the asadhus, the dushkritis, the wicked. Vinashayata dushkritam. So Krishna himself is the greatest sadhu because he protects and delivers the sadhus. We find also in Krishna that quality of a sadhu, that even though he is most respectable, he offers respect to others. He's not puffed up. In this material world, someone who is respected, it goes to their head. They become proud. But not Krishna. He remains very humble. He doesn't mind being the messenger of Yudhishthira. He doesn't say, hey, I'm God, you can't tell me, don't ask me to do that. Or he drives the chariot of Arjuna. We find that Karna, he was always, denigrated by the Pandavas. We won't find the name Karna in Bhagavad Gita, but he is referred to as what? Anyone? Sutaputra. He's referred to in Bhagavad Gita as the son of a chariot driver. So that's considered some very low position in relation to the Kshatriyas. But Krishna took that position for Arjuna. Krishna didn't become less by doing that. He became more. Krishna can't become more because he's always perfect and complete. But he becomes more because he shows his he demonstrates or he enacts his pastimes, his quality of being so kind to his devotees. He's not concerned with prestige. This is an important point about a sadhu. Even though he accepts all prestige, he doesn't, he's not attached to that. He does whatever is required to benefit his devotees. We may ask, why does Krishna come as a fish? A fish and a pig? He comes as a pig? Well, he does that to benefit his devotees. To lift up the earth, to rescue the civilization from the great flood. Nowadays, the people are very afraid that they're, by the global warming, all the land will be inundated. But if there's anyone chanting Hare Krishna, then Krishna will save him. So, he is a sadhu. And he likes to live as a sadhu. Even Rama, he was the king of Ayodhya. But he actually became very happy when he was exiled to the forest. He thought, this is very nice, living in the forest with all the rishis, living a very simple life. He thought that was very nice. So he has that quality of simplicity and righteousness, principled, following the Vedas. These are all points which make sadhus sadhus. And the greatest sadhu is Krishna, and he makes the sadhus, and he helps them to remain in their position as sadhus. Because in this world of asat, in which everything is unprincipled, especially in Kali Yuga, everything is wrong and bad and unprincipled and hypocritical. How can one be a sadhu in this age? By Krishna's help. If he invests in us via the parampara system, even a little drop of his own righteousness, correctness, and steadiness on the path, then we can also become fixed in Krishna consciousness by His mercy. Hare Krishna! That's all I'm going to say for now about this, unless anyone has any question about this. I hope you could all follow what I was saying. I was using a few Sanskrit words there. I hope you can follow what they mean. Yes, please. Oh, I'm not expert in that kind of thing. Prince Charles being the next king of England, you better go and ask him. Where is he? He's just down the road in Buckingham Palace. Where does he live? Anyone know? Kensington Palace? A little further. Yeah. If Prince Charles is to be Krishna's representative as the King of England, I mean the King of England nowadays, considering what England is not really that much of a representative, but in some ways, you can say. At least in a shadow form, you can say.
I was just wondering how that might manifest in somebody in Kali Yuga, a king in Kali Yuga.
King in Kali Yuga, how it might manifest.
Like being
a representative of Krishna. Yeah, the representative of Krishna should be like Yudhishthira, isn't it? He should be fully righteous and following Dharma. How does it manifest in the modern age? Well, we find that when Sanatana Goswami, he was the prime minister. They call it a different name, but practically you could say prime minister. In the court of Nawab Hussain Shah, who was the independent, more or less independent ruler of Bengal at the time. And even before that, there was another minister, they're all Hindu ministers, it seems, Keshava Chhatri. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was coming toward the capital of Nawab Hussain Shah, the name of the capital was Goura, from which we get the word Gauriya. So, Nawab Hussain Shah asked Keshav Chatri, what's going on with this Chaitanya who's coming? There's a huge crowd of Hindus marching up towards our capital. He was concerned. The Nawab was concerned. Nawab means like king, Muslim king. In India, they were called Nawab. So he was concerned. They're marching on us. They're gonna attack us, or what's going on? And Keshav Chatri, he said, well, you don't have to worry. It's just rumors that there are so many people. There are just a few hangers-on. There's nothing really to worry about. But Nawab Hussain Shah, he wasn't very satisfied, so he asked another minister of his called, who at the time was called Sakar Malik, who later became Rupa Goswami, and he said, well, what do you think about this Chaitanya? And Rupa Goswami said to him, it is your great fortune that he who gave you this position as the ruler of Bengal is coming to give benediction to your kingdom by personally placing his feet in them. And people say he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I'm not going to tell you. You're the king, you are his representative. You just look in your own heart and see what you think, whether he's God or not. And Nawab Hussain Shah said, yeah, actually, I think you're right. I think he is God. And then after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had come and gone and told Rupa and Sanatan to give up their government posts and come and join him, then Sanatan Goswami, he left government service, and on the plea of sickness, he remained in his home and he listened to Srimad Bhagavatam recited by Brahmanas. So the Nawab was concerned that Sanatan Goswami, who was managing all the affairs of his kingdom for him, the Nawab himself he didn't bother managing his kingdom, he just left it all to Sanatan. You look after it for me. And Sanatan was reported giving sick leave. And it went on a few days, and then the Nawab sent his doctor to check Sanatan. And the doctor came back with the news, nothing wrong with him, he's physically perfectly all right. So then the Nawab knew that Sanatan's taking, unjustified sick leave. So he came into Sanatan's court and saw him listening to Srimad Bhagavatam. And he said, so he came in, and everyone, all the Brahmins, they stood up to offer him respect. That's the point I wanted to make. They offered him respect. Even though the kings honored the Brahmanas honored the kings, because the Brahmanas are the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and so is the king. Now, we may say that, well, the Nawab, he was a cow-killing enemy of Hinduism, you could call it, Hinduism for want of a better term. But they offered him respect, understanding that he, for better or worse, he'd got that position as a result of some pious activities, and that position was awarded to him by the Supreme Lord. So, someone who does have a position of power, political power, they're also representing the Supreme Lord in one way, even in this Kali Yuga. But they don't have a very clear understanding of that. So we don't offer respect to them to the extent that we would offer to Yudhishthira, but we may respect that position. Actually, years ago, I remember Prince Charles, when he was asked about his role as defender of the faith, which means the Church of England. But he said, "I'd something to the effect that I'd rather be known as the defender of all faiths. Because nowadays, the Church of England, and then there was, when Henry VIII first of all made the Church of England, and then it was pitted against the Catholic Church, and there was a political struggle which went on for a few generations. But now it's not just Protestants and Catholics, it's Muslims and Jews and Hare Krishnas, and lots of Hindus and Sikhs and probably a few Parsis here, one or two in England also. And what are Buddhists? Lots of Buddhists of sorts in England. So Prince Charles said he'd rather be known as the defender of all faiths, which is probably more appropriate for his present role. So, do you have any more? Is that a specific question or what? One thing is the leader of the country has to take 1/6 of the karma of all the citizens, good and bad. And in this country, it's mostly bad. Whew! 1/6 of what one person, what any ordinary beef-eating, gin-drinking Englishman does in a day is enough to give you a long appointment with Yamaraj. What to speak of getting 1/6 of all the reactions. You better go out and chant Hare Krishna and help poor old Prince Charles purify the place. Bhagavad Gita, Bill Clinton got recently. Is it going to save him? You are saved. Definitely that's going to help him a lot. And the very fact that Bill Clinton, it's no secret. He's not the most moral of people. He doesn't eat meat anymore. He does like devotees. And it's years ago when he was the president, he was attending some Save the Earth kind of conference, what they call an ecological conference somewhere in South America. And devotees were chanting outside the hotel he was staying. He came out and waved. He didn't have to do that. Last year, was it? He got a Bhagavad Gita in Santa Monica, California, Los Angeles. And he himself, the devotee didn't see him, and he himself came over to the devotee and embraced him. So he likes devotees, and that will definitely, the very fact of liking devotees will help him. So you like Bill Clinton? He didn't buy it, I think. He was given it, but maybe he was given one before. But I mean, he definitely, for whatever reason, he likes devotees. He may not know why or particularly, so that will definitely help him. The fact he's got the Bhagavad Gita. Prince Charles also got the Bhagavad Gita years ago, must have been the 1980s. He was visiting India. He's visited India how many times, Basu Ghosh? How many times has Prince Charles visited India? At least twice that I know of.
It's been a while.
Well, not so long ago that he came, but he came in the 1980s. Yeah, yeah.
I have a question.
He came in the, let me just finish this. Yeah. In the 1980s, I believe it was, he came to India and they gave him, he was, one of the functions he attended, I believe it was in Bombay, was, it was still Bombay at the time, was some dance performance or something like that. And just as he was going in, someone presented him a Bhagavad Gita as it is. I can't remember who it is, who, but we have enough contacts in India that any one of a dozen big people we could get to give it to him. And apparently, as it was reported in the ISKCON World Review at the time, if you remember that, he spent the whole dance performance reading the Bhagavad Gita. He is a thoughtful person. He talks to his plants, for which he was ridiculed, but that actually makes the plants grow better. He's into aesthetics, especially architectural aesthetics. He's a thoughtful person. If he wasn't the king to be, you never know. He might have been out there with Parashuram in the Glastonbury mud. You never know. This new Prince George, apparently he's got a very, very spiritual horoscope. There'll come a time in his 20s when he starts to think about the big questions of life. Yeah, okay. So please.
No,
you have the floor.
A god brother who I don't know, I saw this article on Dandavats about Bill Clinton becoming a vegan.
I didn't know about that, actually. I've Bill Clinton's a vegan. What's the reason for that?
Health. Is it
health reasons? Yeah. Most people become vegetarians or whatnot for health reasons.
Also have their own morality.
Yeah, yeah. More than the vegetarians.
They feel that if you support the dairy industry.
If you support the dairy industry, you're supporting horrible violence.
Yeah. Some of them, not everyone. I think some vegans believe that dairy products aren't good for you.
That's also there, yeah.
So.
Oh,
I cut this.
I'll just give a quick interruption. I remember during the Carter presidency, he had a one-day token vegetarian day at the White House. And it was another of his bad political moves. He really couldn't get it right. Although he was he's a nice guy. I mean, he's quite different to Nixon and Bush. He's actually, what I understand about Carter, he actually wants to do good for the world. But he got lambasted by the meat industry for doing that. Anyway, go on.
So I cut the link and pasted it on my Facebook page, and a godbrother who I don't know, from the tone, I assume he wasn't really...
Oh, they don't like vegans. There's a heavy anti-vegan lobby within ISKCON.
I don't care about Clinton. Prabhupada is the greatest.
Silly thing to say.
I had a debate with him. You know, it's funny because Prabhupada, if you read Prabhupada's books and conversations, he never was Bhakti Siddhanta is the greatest type of fanaticism. No, he talked about so many philosophers.
Yeah.
He talked about Marx.
Of course, if we say something good about Clinton or Prince Charles, it doesn't mean that we think that Prabhupada's, they're anywhere near the level of Prabhupada.
And then I pointed out Yad Acharati Shrestha.
Yeah.
That here's a leader of society, like you were talking about Hussein Shah.
Yeah.
Was the leader of the society for whatever reason. Clinton was the leader of society.
Yeah.
Still millions of people respect him. And if he comes out as I said vegetarian.
Yeah.
And this devotee was arguing, well, vegan is not vegetarian. I said, the last time I checked, a vegan is a vegetarian. A vegetarian may not be a vegan.
Yeah.
But a vegan is a vegetarian. So what's your comment on that?
Well, ultimately, Bhadra, what is that? What is that verse? Bhadra.
I don't know that one.
Bhadra, Shabmano Dharma. I'm missing one word. To see what's good and what's bad on the material platform, it's ultimately monodharma, because only that which is directly in relationship with Krishna is actually good. A bhalo, a manda. Dvaite bhadra bhadra gyam, a shab something. Bhalo manda. I didn't get that. I lost it today. But ultimately, to say something is good or bad on the mundane platform has no meaning. It's in relationship to Krishna. That's what's ultimately good and bad. Because the good man of today can be the bad man of tomorrow, and the bad man of tomorrow can be the good man. So good and bad on the mundane platform, it all leads to the cemetery. Yesterday, as we were going on the road in Crawley, in Sussex, is it? Crawley in Sussex? West Sussex. I saw a sign, road sign, cemetery with an arrow. So I thought, well, everyone's going to the cemetery. So it's punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. But still, we can say, I mean, just like I just said, Carter's, from what I can see, he had some motive to try and do good and help others. Whereas others like Nixon and Bush, they appear to be just totally unprincipled and exploitive. So, I mean, we can say like that.
My point to him
it's not, we can say that. We know that ultimately on the spiritual platform, Carter's nowhere near it and Nixon's nowhere near it, but still, And Clinton, the fact that he took Prabhupada's Gita and he likes devotees, I mean, that's for his eternal spiritual benefit. We don't say that he's a... We're not going to make him Saint Bill, but Krishna likes him.
My point was that if people get inspired to become vegetarian,
yeah,
they come into the mode of goodness.
Somewhat, yeah.
Yeah. From the mode of ignorance.
Yeah. The very fact that many devotees appreciated Bill Clinton's appreciation of the devotees, that also helps him. If a devotee likes you, then Krishna likes you, right? So, I mean, all these politicians, they have a lot of blood on their hands, especially the President of the United States. A lot of blood on their hands. But if you think about it, like this Tony Blair or whatever, I mean, he was just some ordinary guy who went up through the ranks. It wasn't like in the old days when the son of the king became the king. He went to school like everyone else and went to university, and you never know, Yadunandan, you might be the Prime Minister of India. Of course, you're not ordinary because you're born in a devotee family. But, I mean, I don't think they all started off thinking, I'm going to be the Prime Minister and screw the world up. But they just got in that position. So, Hare Krishna. Yeah. What is the difference between sadhu, fakir, and avadhut? Well, you could say they all come under the general heading of sadhu. Fakir is, of course, a Muslim term. And you can say, broadly speaking, you could say fakir is a sadhu, Muslim sadhu. In Bengal, fakir is often used for, they may not be a sadhu, but they have some mystic power. And they do, especially when the people get snake bite, you call the fakir. And they do some mystic mantras and whatever and cure snake bite or jaundice or whatever. In the villages in Bengal where the people have, they've never seen a Western trained or allopathic trained doctor, for serious things like that, jaundice, snake bite, then the fakir, they apply something and say some mantras, and so that's there. And avadhut literally means, well, it literally means one who's fully washed. But that means a sadhu who doesn't follow any rules and regulations. Most sadhus, they have to strictly follow rules and regulations, but one who is beyond that platform or pretending to be is known as an avadhut. One who's already washed so clean, he doesn't need to follow any more rules. But you find sadhus in India nowadays who just take avadhut as a kind of title. They're not actually living like an avadhut. Vanshidas Babaji is the example of an avadhut. So, I think we can talk. I have the book on Vanshidas Babaji, if that whetted your curiosity. Yeah, this is an example of avadhut.
Is that an expanded edition?
Yeah. I found out some more stuff.
Oh, because it looks bigger than the old one.
Yeah, it's bigger than the old one. Orbi Patamila. Orusme Dala. When Prabhupada went to America, he was asked, are you bringing a new religion? I don't remember that specifically.
In answer to that, Prabhupada said, I'm just paraphrasing, that I'm just helping you to practice your own religion in a better way.
I don't think there was any such exchange exactly like that when Prabhupada said, was asked, are you bringing a new religion? And Prabhupada said, I'm helping you to practice your religion in a better way. But, yeah, there were... He did say that if you can be a, you don't have to give up your religion, you can practice it, you can become a better Christian like that. So he would say that. But with Christians, he was very strong on the point that if you really want to be a Christian, then don't eat meat. That was his prerequisite for becoming a better Christian. Okay, Hare Krishna. We'll finish it. It's almost 1:30. Oh, questions are still flying in. Huh?
I have one burning question.
Burning question. Don't make it burn too much. You might self-ignite. There was a kid in Tamil Nadu. Did you see that? A baby in Tamil Nadu kept on catching on fire.
On its own.
Yeah. There are so many cases reported of this that the doctors have stopped pretending it doesn't exist and now they call it such and such syndrome. Human beings just ignite. Yeah. Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Maharaj, you spoke about faith and Prince Charles saying he's a defender of faith. Christian consciousness is obviously the direct path in order to Godhead. So, in relation to other faiths whose path is, I guess, an impersonal one, they see God as an impersonal God. So, does that mean those faiths?
Various faiths. Well, Srila Prabhupada, whenever he was asked, what do you believe? He would say, it's not a question of belief. It's a fact. It's a science. It's a question of understanding. So when we talk about other faiths or religions, are they an illusion? Yeah. To some extent. There's some truth is there, but it's mixed with untruth also. For instance, if we accept that there is a supreme being, well, that's good. But if we think that only the people who believe the way that we believe are saved by that supreme being, and that supreme being, out of his infinite mercy and kindness, throws all the rest of them into hell with absolutely no chance of ever being redeemed from that situation, that is illusion. That is ignorance. And it's horrible, actually. I mean, they've done such a bad job for God consciousness, because anyone who's... anyone can understand that, well, God is either not merciful and not kind or non-existent. So many people, when they hear this description of a vindictive God... You didn't believe in me, therefore I burn you in hell forever. I mean, that's horrific. So they just say, we don't believe in any God. If you don't have knowledge of Krishna, and that's the only description of God that's given, it would seem to be a better choice to be an atheist, practically. So yeah, they're in illusion. I'm not saying it's good to be an atheist. But to be a theist whose conception of God is so ungodly, they ascribe such ungodly qualities to God, then that's it's almost worse than being an atheist. Hare Krishna. Yeah, let's finish that.